Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to the Curator Podcast. This is episode 42. Hi, hello, welcome once again, dear listener, to the Curator Podcast. I am your host, Mark Fraser, and this is episode number 42. I've been away for a couple of weeks. I do apologise for that. The reason I was away is because I lost my voice, okay? That happened. That was a thing that happened. And you can actually hear it going in the interview. So it's not just, I'm not just talking bullshit here. You'll actually hear my voice gradually get worse over the course of the interview until it, and then the following day it was completely gone, more or less completely gone. So that kind of kept me out of the game for a couple of weeks. But I'm back now, and I've got a whole bunch of interviews lined up. And when I say lined up, I actually mean that I actually have literally banked interviews. Yes, as of right now, I have some interviews ready to go. I'm not going to be rushing about for a couple of weeks, which is good. I'm happy. So yeah, thanks for sticking with me in this dark period. There will be some changes coming up soon, but I'll let you know about them in due course. But for now, we go on to this interview. And my guest in this episode is AC Slade. Now, AC Slade is kind of a nomad, I guess. He's been in many bands, and he's been associated with some truly great acts over the years. He played guitar in the metal band Dope. He played for the Murder Dolls, and most recently, he also played with Joan Jett and the Black Hearts, and was actually there when Joan Jett got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So the guy's done some shit, man, and he's been around, and you couldn't really, I've not really met that many people that are as sweet as him. I mean, he's just a really nice dude, very down to earth, and you know, he's lived it, he still lives it. You know, he lives a lifestyle that I think most people who are into music and in bands kind of aspire to, you know, and that in and of itself is to be lauded. I interviewed him because one of my previous guests was Billy Liar, and Billy Liar was playing guitar with him on tour. So recently he did his first ever solo UK tour, which he did himself with Billy on guitar with him, and it was a nice jaunt around the UK. So I managed to sit down and have a chat with him right before his show in Glasgow, and it was a good chat. Certainly enjoyed it. I don't want to give away too much because ultimately this one needs to be heard. It's just a lovely guy and very articulate and intelligent, which is what I like. Interviewing him was kind of a big deal for me because the second ever song I learned on guitar was Dead in Hollywood by the Murder Dolls, and my first ever band when I was 16, we used to play that song and a whole bunch of Anti-Flag covers in this weird Masonic Lodge, Orange Hall thing in the West End of Glasgow, and all of our girlfriends would come along and watch us, and we were terrible. We were an awful, awful band. My uncle came down, provided the PA. We brought our own guitars. The drummer had his own drum kit. It was a starter drum kit, starter cymbals. I had a Squire Stratocaster, an Affinity model no less, and it was just, it sounded like crap. And yeah, those were good times, back to the days of innocence before we realised what actually had to happen in order to make a band work. And funnily enough, pretty much all the guys that were in, that I played in that first ever band with, we didn't record any music, but none of them stayed making music. The only other one that wasn't was still into music and still making music and was still active in the music scene in Glasgow. He sadly passed away a few years ago, but yeah, I mean, that's what, that was a rich sort of time for it. It was a really rich time. It was full of really good memories. And Murder Dolls are just full of those memories for me. So talking to AC Slade, who was part of that, was pretty good. I really enjoyed it, and it was quite close to my heart. With that in mind, I'm going to open up with that very Murder Dolls song. I'm going to open up with Dead in the Hollywood, because it has so many memories, and he was in the band. So yeah, I hope you enjoy the interview, and I hope you enjoy this song. I've done lots of interviews in pubs like this, and it's really interesting to be here with an American. AC, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm here with Billy as well, who's over there.
Hello, how's it going?
He's back again. I just can't get rid of him. So, AC, I don't know if you've heard the podcast before, but Billy was on it once, and we kind of talk about passion and creativity, which sounds totally trite and cliche now. I've been doing it for like 45 episodes. But I guess my question for you is, where did it all start, man?
Where did it all start? Church choir when I was a kid, and I played a frog, and the kids who had the really pretty voices, they got a pretty good applause, but when I did my ribbit thing with my rough, ribbity voice, I brought the house down. So at that point, I kind of figured that having a little bit of, I don't know, camp or like humor to yourself always gets better results. So,
yeah. Have you always had that voice then?
I guess so. I guess so.
That's quite a young age to have that voice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I tried singing in a Journey tribute band at one point, but that didn't really work out too well.
Why did it not work?
I don't know. The whole Steve Perry thing, you know. They already had that guy from the Philippines in the band, and, you know, they were just afraid that, you know, I'd obviously steal the show and it wouldn't work out, so.
So, wait, was the Journey tribute band actually Journey, who are now a tribute band of Journey?
Oh, I'm taking the piss. There was no Journey tribute band.
So, you've got a new album out, which is, from what I hear, is pretty good. I couldn't hear it, which is a bit of a bummer. But I like the people you worked with on it. How did that come about?
Well, let's see. It's a weird thing because on one hand, I kind of tried to do as much as I could for once on an album. So I played all the bass, I played all the rhythm guitars, I did all the lead vocals, and I wrote everything pretty much myself. But I had Frank Fair from Guns N' Roses play drums on it, and I've known him forever. And while people kind of slag him off because they're like, oh, he's a scab member of the band, you know, you got to understand, like, I've known that guy forever, and he has been in band after band after band that has gone nowhere. So, you know, hey, if somebody's going to do it, I'm glad it's my mate. You know what I mean? So I'm really happy for him. And then Christian Martucci played on it. Christian and I were actually in our first band together when we were kids. And it was kind of like a death rock type of band. And we grew up in this area that was kind of the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, New Jersey type area. And it's been really awesome because our lives have taken these similar but different paths, in that he was playing with Dee Ramone for a long time. And then now he plays in the band Stone Sour with Corey Taylor from Slipknot. And I used to play with Joey Jordison from Slipknot when I was in the Murder Dolls. And then I played with Joan Jett. So we had this really weird thing where we both played with these punk icons and then this weird Slipknot connection. And yet neither of us were Slipknot fans. And it was like, how does this happen to two guys from the middle of nowhere, you know? So
I thought it's really interesting that you kind of talk about that whole idea of people being in bands that have went nowhere for a long period of time. And I think, like, speaking as a musician and as musicians that I know, like, we've all experienced that, haven't we? And I think you're totally right. Like, if someone goes, can you play in my, you know, huge band, you'd be like, well, fuck yes, I'm going to do that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and the truth is, I think in Frank's situation, I might be speaking out of turn, but, you know, the original guy who should be there, I mean, part of the reason he's not there is his own damn fault, you know? So it's not like he orchestrated some sort of maneuver to get the guy out. So, you know, hey, somebody's got to do it.
You're all the whim of Axl Rose, and everybody's fair game, really, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of Axl Rose, the AC/DC thing, have you seen that today?
Yeah.
I have mixed opinions on it. Like, I mean, to me, it's kind of cool that they're only going to do, I guess, like the 10 or 20 shows or whatever. In a way, it's kind of cool. Like, at least it's something exciting in a way. But like Billy was saying, like, it'd have been a lot cooler if they'd have done it 20 years ago.
It's interesting because I don't think they'll last. I think this will be it. Like, after they do those shows, it'll probably be over, because how can you continue? You know.
Well, on top of that, too, it's like, clearly they run a very tight ship. It's like they got rid of Brian Johnson because he was having a hearing problem. I mean, to be honest with you, they probably should have stood by their buddy a little bit and seen if they could have worked something out. But instead it was like, nope, forget about it. You know, next. So, I mean, I'm curious to see how they're going to react if he's going on stage late or whatever.
There's a video online just now of Angus Young joining them at Coachella last night, playing some AC/DC songs. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And interesting is definitely the adjective I would use. So it started at choir, but, I mean, when did you first realize you're going to be a songwriter?
Songwriter? I started playing in a band with some friends, and I didn't really like the lyrics that the guitar player was writing. And so I would rewrite them, and he would get pissed off about it. And then that's kind of when I realized that I had my own voice, you know. I've always just liked being in bands. So sometimes I like writing my own stuff and playing my own stuff, and sometimes I like being a side guy, you know. There's pros and cons to both, you know. I mean, the pros to being a side guy, like this artist I play with, Rachel Lauren, I like the fact that I'm not the center of attention with that band. I really kind of like that. Like, I can just sort of play, enjoy being in the music, you know, but when it's your own thing, everything's on you. And that's a lot of there's a lot of glory to it, but there's a lot of pressure too, so.
And you got involved with Billy's last record and this current one as well. How did that happen? You guys can both answer this, I guess. I didn't even ask you this when I interviewed you.
You good?
Where do you want me to start?
The beginning.
Me and AC met over 10 years ago when Trashlight Vision played, AC's old band in Edinburgh. They played at a venue called Studio 24, and I was a big fan of all the bands that AC played in when I was growing up. And So I only had one copy of, like, only 10 copies ever of my first EP got made, because I kind of fell out with this manager that I had. Like, he wasn't really managing me, but he was sort of like, he suggested the studio that I got, he suggested the photographer for the first photo shoot I ever got, blah blah blah. He helped me out in some ways, but he's a good guy. But we in the end, I only ever made 10 copies of my first EP. That's the easy way of saying it. To cut a long story short. And so I had one copy of my own first EP, and I knew that AC was playing in town. So I went to see his band play, and I made sure I met him, and I gave him that one copy. And about a week later, he got in touch. He sent me an email and said, let's work together. So we did, and we've been friends ever since.
It's pretty cool. So you managed to make a weird Scottish friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to me, it was really cool. Like, I'm always flattered anytime someone gives me their music, because, you know, I'm a musician too, and I know studio time costs money. And, you know, back at that time, you know, burning CDs, it took time to burn that CD. That CD costs money. None of this shit grows on a tree. So I'm always very flattered when people do that, and I do always make it a point to try to listen to all of them. And, you know, I listened to, and Billy's thing to me is, like, he kind of came off like almost like he's this crust punk kid, and he's like, oh, it's acoustic punk. And I'm like, the fuck is that all about? All right, let me give this a listen. And I listened to it, and I thought it was amazing. And, you know, like you said, it was one of only 10. I went home, I sold it on eBay for $200, and I was like, okay, I got to work with this guy. You know, there's a lot of cash in this cow. So
where'd it all go, man? So, yeah, you've been in a lot of bands, man, and you have, I guess, you're the kind of the journeyman, I guess, of rock.
What's that?
You're like a journeyman almost.
Yeah, I guess so.
A bit nomadic, you could say.
Yeah, I guess so.
But this is your first solo UK tour. First proper solo record.
Yeah.
How is that?
Well, I finally figured it out. Like, I can't fire myself, so this way maybe it'll be like the last one. You know, honestly, if it was up to me, I mean, there's pros and cons to both. It's like, if my life had worked out the way that I'd wanted it to, you know, after the Murder Dolls did our first record, that would have been my career. I would have been super happy if that was my career from there on out. I would have loved that. You know, had that not happened, had that second record not happened with me, I never would have ended up playing with Joan Jett and the whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing and all that stuff. So everything always ends up working out, you know. So,
and you got, so where did you, I guess the question I really wanted to ask is, when did you decide it was time for the AC Slade solo album?
Well, when we were recording Joan's record, I started writing again. And I really liked the songs that I was writing. And originally, some of the stuff I was writing, I had her in mind. And it became clear that she wanted to make her own record, which is totally cool. Like, I get it. But I was like, I don't know, I think you're nuts. My songs are really good, and I would use them. But it's an artistic thing, you know? And, you know, so I got that. And so as I'm writing these songs, I'm like, I'm digging this, man. This is cool. And so originally I was just going to do an EP, and I wanted to nail that before I went on the road with Joan again. So I had like a small window of time, and I started talking about it on my social media, and I just said, you know, hey, I'm going to do this EP. And everyone just said, you know, no, we want a full length, we want a full length, we want a full length. And so, you know, I did a Pledge Music campaign, and that worked out really, really well. And so that's kind of how it came about. I didn't really set out to do it as a solo band, you know.
That was the thing I was going to ask you about the Pledge Music campaign. Like, obviously, that's spectacularly well. And a lot of people use it, and they've had a great success with it. How did you find the process of involving fans quite intimately into the whole creative process, I guess?
There's a lot of things that were really surprising about it. I was surprised how much money people would spend, to be honest with you. I mean that in a flattering way. You know, I don't usually like to talk about finance in these things, but it was really flattering that people would contribute. I thought it was going to be like, oh, people are going to, you know, buy the $5 download. Nobody did. Like, most people were spending $30 and more, which was great. So that part of it was awesome. It was awesome to know that I had a budget to work with, like, before I even walked into the studio. So it just made everything, it took so much pressure off, you know. It took the pressure off, but I still had to work hard to get to, you know, I got lucky because I got to 100% really fast. I quickly realized that I had miscalculated a lot of my finance, you know, and I was like, shit, like, I hope it, you know, like, we keep going with this, you know, and I did. So, yeah, that was the most flattering part about it, really.
So did that influence the vibe of the record?
No. Mm-mm. No.
It was always just going to be the sort of same.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end, I guess the only thing that was a little bit of pressure was that it was like I always wanted to do a 10-song album. I'm not a fan of 12, 14-song records. I'm a fan of, you know, all killer, no filler type of thing. But I did feel at the end like, all right, do I really have enough for the full length? Like, you know, should it be this song or that song? And that kind of, but besides that, no.
So I'm wondering, because you said you took some time off from playing with Joan to write the record, you had a little bit of time. Do you write a lot of music? Is that a constant thing, or is it just whenever you find the time? Or, like, I know, like, Billy's quite prolific, and the reason I'm asking is because me as a songwriter, I'm not prolific at all, and I'm always really curious as to, like, how the process kind of works, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm usually writing songs, except for when I'm not, you know? I have a lot of creative outlets, and to be honest with you, sometimes it is a matter of, like, okay, well, I got, you know, an album to do, so now it's time to start focusing on that. You know, this artist I work with, Rachel, you know, we're going to be starting to work on a full-length album, so I'm starting to write stuff for her, you know, but it just, sometimes songs just come out of the air, you know, and sometimes it's a matter of, all right, I got to be focused and go through my hard drive and figure out, you know, what mumbling memos I have, you know. So it's weird. It's sometimes there's, like, a whole bunch happening at once, and other times it's a matter of, like, all right, sit down and focus.
I've spoken about this recently in a couple of episodes. One of the reasons I started this podcast is because I felt that my own creative process was, like, broken, almost irreparably. And in certain ways it is. When I spoke to Billy about it, I was like, I'd love to write acoustic punk tunes like Billy, but I just can't fucking do it. It's just not happening, right? But I thought by doing this podcast I'd get some answers, but everyone's so wildly different. I'm kind of like, well, that's not really worked out the way I'd hoped.
I wouldn't say it's effortless. I'd say it is a matter of, you got to pick up your guitar, you know, or you got to listen for those things that people say that are worth writing down to turn into a song lyric. You have to kind of pay attention to it. I've used the Brian Eno oblique strategy cards before. They're pretty cool. But I find that when I need to use them, I don't know if this makes any sense, that the more I thought I needed to use them, the less I really needed to use them.
Maybe that's perhaps the point of them then.
Yeah. It's like just by going through the process of having them in my phone, I don't need to use them.
That's super interesting, because you're the first person I've heard about the oblique strategies for a while, but you're the first person I've spoken to that's actually said that they use them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're so cool. And you can apply them to anything. I mean, I'm into photography as well, and you know, you can apply all those things to photography, and as the name implies, they're oblique strategies. They're not, like, you know, anything very direct. So
I wanted to talk about something that is kind of the elephant in the room. I'm talking to a Hall of Famer, which is fucking crazy. Like, what was that like?
Well, I mean, I'm not. The band I played for was inducted, but I feel very, I don't know, it's a weird thing. On one hand, it's like, I know some really, really, I don't want to say famous, but successful people in their careers. And I can't lie, there's times where I kind of feel like, wow, man. Like when we were, I forget where we were the other day. We were somewhere the other day, and there's pictures of, like, Korn and some other bands and stuff like that. And I was thinking, like, you know, I kind of was able to be a part of something that, I don't know, I mean, maybe Korn will someday, I don't know, but I was able to be a part of something that a lot of my peers haven't been able to be a part of. At the same time, I really had nothing to do with Joan. I can't say really. I had absolutely zero to do with Joan Jett being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She would have gotten in there regardless of me, and it was long fucking overdue. And, I mean, it was pretty cool. I got to play with Gary Ryan, who's the original bass player. I got to play with him because I was in the band at that point, but part of the induction is getting the original band up there. So I got to play with him, which was cool because I've been learning all of his bass lines and stuff like that. That was cool. And you know, it's a shame that, you know, the original drummer couldn't be there to be a part of it. And I was really happy that, I was just happy to have been in the band at the time that that happened.
Was it daunting when you first got the call to play for Joan?
It was weird. I'd quit music. Yeah, I'd quit. I played in, you know, some bands that had some success and toured a lot. And I went independent at a time where people were kind of saying it was a good time to go independent. But really, the bands I was in, I mean, it wasn't like I was in Radiohead. It wasn't like I was in the Ramones or something at that point. The whole crowdfunding thing and going independent thing is very helpful if you have a story, you know. And crowdfunding hadn't quite started yet. So I went out on my own. It wasn't working out how I'd hoped. And I went to hair school. I learned how to cut hair. And I got done cutting hair. And the first time I gave somebody a haircut, and they turned and they handed me $60, and they handed me a $20 tip, and I didn't have to split it four ways with the band, and I didn't have to give 15% to a manager, and I didn't have to pay for gas for it or anything. I was like, I'm in, man. Like, this is awesome. And you're still creative, and you still get to have stupid tattoos and dumb haircuts and everything, and, you know, listen to music all day. And I was like, I think this is it. I quit music. I'm done. And I got a phone call, and I walked outside, and it was a friend of mine, and she said, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm the first day at work. And she said, okay, well, go home and learn 5 Joan Jett songs, because you're auditioning for Joan this week, and if you nail it, you've got the gig. Do you have a passport to go to Australia? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I quit. And she's like, no, go home and learn the songs. And that was it, you know?
It was Cherry Bomb, wasn't it? It was one of the songs that kind of got you the gig. And I guess it must have been quite surreal.
Pardon?
It's been quite surreal.
Yeah, it was, you know, it wasn't until she walked in the room. And even when she walked in the room, it wasn't. To be honest with you, it was when she played her first chord, because I never realized that Joan has a distinct guitar sound. And as soon as, like, she walked in, you know, like I said, I've known some really successful people. It's like, all right, you're Joan, I'm here to do work, you know, and that kind of went out the door. And then as soon as she hit a chord, I was like, I know that fucking sound, man. You know, it was the Joan Jett guitar sound. And, like, all my cool dropped, and I got nervous as shit.
that must have been... I can't even imagine being in, like... It's kind of weird to be in the presence of yourself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems really bizarre to me. Speaking of sound... Your music that you create has a very distinctive sound.
Oh, thank you.
And it all kind of leads back to me. It always reminds me of, like, sort of glam punk stuff.
Yeah.
I guess, is that? I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase the question without sounding pure like a total dick. is that something that you're always attracted to with music? Was that, like, the first thing that made you go, I'm a guitar player, or I'm a musician, basically?
Yeah, because one of the things I feel very, very lucky about is, with growing up in the middle of nowhere when I did, I didn't hang out with the metalheads, and I didn't hang out with the punks, and I didn't hang out with the goths, because there weren't enough of those people for them to have their own scene. So we all hung out together. And it was like just the art class crowd, you know what I mean? So there was only like 6 of us that wore all black and Doc Martens. And so for me, it's like, all right, well, if you wear all black and you have Doc Martens, you could be in a punk band, you could be in a goth band, you could be in a heavy metal band, you could be in a ska band, you could be... And so I just saw it all as something that wasn't them. And I just knew I didn't want to be them, you know? And... So I just always had, like, this really broad range of influences. And, you know, we would listen to the Dead Kennedys, or we would watch... I remember watching Who Killed Bambi at a friend's house while everybody was tripping on acid, and then, like, somebody put 9-inch nails on, and it was a cool time. And then grunge came in, and I was kind of like, well, I didn't like it, you know? It didn't speak to me. And I was like, well, what happened after the Ramones, and what happened after a lot of the people that I like? And it was the New York Dolls happened, and then Hanoi Rocks happened, and the whole glam punk thing. And it was like, well, how is this tied together? Well, it's from Bowie and Alice Cooper. So, yeah, I mean, look at Alice Cooper. It's like, I mean, if it wasn't for Alice Cooper, there wouldn't be a lot of the punk bands that there are. you know? And then you take it the other way, and Bob Dylan's favorite American lyricist is Alice Cooper, too, so...
I didn't know that. That's really bizarre.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, talk about, like, such a... That guy will go down as, like... He should be to America what David Bowie kind of is to the UK. And we don't. And it's such bullshit. It's like, he should get the respect that Bowie gets, in my opinion.
Speaking of Alice Cooper, have you heard the Hollywood Vampires album?
No.
Oh, that's just shot that right down. I don't know what to say now. It's really weird to hear Johnny Depp playing guitar. You've not heard it. It's got a lot of covers on it, man. It's like half covers. It's pretty mental. But yeah, that's just put an end to that line of question. Killed it dead. Let me go back to my questions. I thought we were on a roll there. Oh man, I've asked all the, we've covered all the questions so far. Shit. Ran out of things to say.
Oh, really?
All right. So now you're doing the whole solo UK tour thing. How are you feeling about it coming up?
I'm a little nervous, you know. I mean, I've never done an acoustic thing before, so that's new for me. I gotta make sure I sing well, because you know, you're not having crash cymbals, and you know, it's not all the throwing shit around and throwing yourself on the ground. So yeah, I really gotta play better than I have in the past, so that's a little bit of pressure. And I don't know how it's going to be received, and I don't have a record company, and I don't have a publicist, and I don't have a promoter. I'm doing this all myself, so yeah, I'm a little nervous about that, but it reaches a point where you just have to let go of the results and enjoy it, you know. So I'd say that I'm a little nervous, but you know, just like always, it's like you hit that first chord and you know, it's all rolls downhill from there. So, yeah.
So you kind of went back to the whole DIY thing. What was it like going? Like, did that feel comforting to go back to that? In 10 degree.
It's good and bad to it. I mean, you know, when you were talking about the songwriting thing, one of the things that is distracting is the whole social media thing. I'm not down on it at all, but it becomes another full time job. You know, like you used to be able to, you'd hone your craft, you'd really work on it, and then, you know, you'd say, okay, well, this band's playing this night, I got to hand out flyers there. This band's playing that night, got to turn up at that gig. My friend's band is playing, I got to support them because I know they'll come to my show. And there was at least a time that you were kind of, you had downtime, and now it's like constant, you know, like you constantly have to be promoting yourself through social media, and it's a little taxing, you know, because you never know where exactly it's going, you know.
I get that. Like, that's one of the things that when I started the podcast, I was heavy on Twitter. Like, I was on it every single day, and I've kind of pulled back. And you know what? Like, it does. I have seen differences. It's kind of experimentally. It's like if I don't tweet certain things at certain times, then certain things don't get listened to as much as other things. And it's utterly bizarre. I still don't know if I understand it or really want it to be a thing that exists, but it kind of does, and I need to deal with it. But yeah, I guess doing your own shows and all that, like that must be quite cool to have all the control.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that I don't know, a lot of the bands I've been in have been very DIY. I mean, this band Dope I used to play in, we never
talked about Dope yet.
Well, yeah. we were assigned to Sony, and we never took for granted that they were going to do their job. In fact, we got in a lot of trouble because, I mean, we would turn up at gigs and it would be like, well, where's our rep for this town, you know? And it would be like, well, he's supposed to be here. And like, okay, well, where is he? And why are there not posters for our album up in the venue? And why is there not this? And why is there not that? We questioned things a lot. And, you know, so as a result, it would be like, all right, well, fuck them. We're going to bring our own posters on tour. And this way we're going to make sure. And sometimes the reps would turn up and they'd look around and be like, well, who did this? And we'd be like, well, we did, because you're late. And that kind of didn't make us friends at the label sometimes.
How is the... Now, you've been on the major label thing. Was it good? Was it bad? How was it, like, overall?
It's a roll of the dice. It depends. It depends on if you can get them to spend enough money on you. We're lucky with that band Dope. I mean, they spent millions of dollars that they were never, ever going to see again. You know, you take a band that sounds like Ministry, and why would you spend millions of dollars on that? That just doesn't make any sense, you know? When they asked us what the single was going to be for radio, we're like, what's that mean? You mean the song that everybody likes? Oh, well, I don't know. We didn't think about that, you know? So, you know, but by them losing millions of dollars, that band can still tour and make money every year.
Do you still think about that radio thing? I'll reframe the question. Being told that at the time, to me, that would feel quite insulting. It must have been kind of like that. But has it kind of seeped in to other songwriting pursuits? You like to have like that one, those one or two songs that are for the fans or popular?
Well, it's a little bit weird because on one hand, that experience, it does make you think about that. And it does make you think about what is a good song. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're writing for the moment, like if you're ambulance chasing, you're going to lose, you know. But that doesn't mean that it's not smart to pay attention to great songwriters, you know. Cheap Trick, I mean, God, those guys write the best songs ever, you know. So I don't think it's a bad idea to check out good songwriters, you know. I mean, it kind of gets a little bit of a I don't know, say a bad name, but people start to think like, you know, oh, you want to write pop songs? Like, I want to write good songs. I don't know. I mean, what's the difference, you know?
That's a good question. Like, a lot of my favorite songwriters are, I fucking love Prince, you know. I talk about this all the time. And it's because of, like, it's subversive. It's pop, but it's subversive. I love Weezer as well. They do the same thing, you know. I do think it's weird when people call that out and go, no, you shouldn't be writing songs for everyone. You should be writing songs for the select group of people that really love you. And it's like, well, I just write songs the way I write songs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's nice to, I think, on one hand, it's nice to be altruistic and think like, well, if I just sit in my room and write great songs, you know, if you know that, then amazing things will happen. But that's not necessarily the case. And I think just like anything, it can never hurt to refine your craft. So, yeah,
keeping the muscle working, basically.
What's that?
Keeping the muscle working, basically.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just like anything, it's like my photography. I'm always trying to become a better photographer. My bass playing, I'm always trying to be a better bass player. So, you know, don't be lazy and say like, well, no, man, I just write songs for me. If that's the case, cool, but you should really look at yourself and be like, well, is that really the case? Are you being lazy and, you know, trying to shut a door before people slam it on you, you know?
Scared of failure, basically.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, I think I'm scared of failure. That's probably why I've not written those acoustic songs that I really want to write. But I'm just going to wrap it up now. Is there anything else you want to say or anything you want to ask me before we finish?
Well, you're an excellent interview, so thank you very much. And thank you for Billy Lyre for introducing us. And you should check him out. And I would say that people should check out your podcast. But if they're listening to it, well, that would be a little redundant. So
yeah. Maybe I'll just like chop that little bit out and just post it all over the place. Well, AC, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
And Billy, as a pleasure as always.
Cheers, man. Thanks.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So there you have it. AC Slade, what a man. Nice for Billy to be there as well, just to kind of, you know, offer some colour commentary, I suppose you could call it. So I had a great time. It was awesome to chat to the guy, and it was good to hear his stories. And his solo tour was really, really good as well. He also regaled us with stories from his past, none of which I think are, I mean, I can remember a couple of them, but, you know, I just don't even know if he's gonna, I don't know, I don't even know if these stories will make it out. But if you ever go see him live, then I don't want to spoil it for you, because that guy, man, he's done some stuff, it's pretty cool. Yeah, so thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for bearing with me while I've been trying to recover my voice. It's been a tough time. You know, the whole vocal thing was really scary. You know, it was a scary fucking time, man, because I thought I'd lost my voice completely. You can actually hear it. It's a bit croaky just now because I've just done some vocals and I did a wee thing wrong, and I've been learning how to do it properly, but I did a wee thing wrong and they kind of blew my throat out a little bit. I can still talk, I still sound fine, I can still sing and stuff, so it was good. But when I lost my voice, I thought to myself, I've probably not done any damage, but if this is what it takes, how am I going to survive on the road? You know, how what is my future? I might scream in false hopes, but I love singing. I am a singer and I would never want to lose that ability. So in the 2 weeks I was away, not only did I lose my voice, but there was a lot of soul searching, you know. But you don't want to hear about that. It's all back to normal now, thank God. So thank you very much for listening to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with AC Slade. I had a great time talking to him. Thank you, Billy, for sorting that out for me. What a gentleman he is. If you get a second, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes or even talk to me on Twitter. I'd like to be more active on Twitter, and I think if more people spoke to me, then I would be more active on Twitter. But I'm finding it quite hard to do it at the moment for various reasons. Like, and as I said earlier on in the podcast, I will get into those at a later date. But for now, just give us a chat. Just have some chat. Just come and talk. Let me know you're out there. I want to know that you're out there and that you're listening and that you like what's happening, because there's going to come a point soon where this is going to stop happening, and you know, it's good to know that people like it and value it. So just please come say hi. That'd be awesome. So yeah, last year AC Slade did a pledge music campaign for his solo album, and it's a really good record, and he smashed his target. He completely fucking smashed it. It was great. It's called Valentine's for Sick Minds, and you can get it online, and it's really, really good. It's worth checking out if you like the sort of glammy kind of punk stuff that he's kind of been associated with his whole life. I'm going to play you out now with a song from that record. It's called One Fist in the Gold, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much for listening. Until next week, bye-bye. But you
turning your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.